Get ready to hear the truth about America on a show that's not immune to the facts with your host, Dan Bongino.
Folks, there is a new and deeply troubling phenomenon taking hold of Americans genuflecting before people in the bizarre request for absolution and forgiveness for people they've done nothing wrong to. You're like, this can't be. No, it's real. I've got that. I've got the Rosenstein hearing where he just completely humiliated himself, along with a number of Democrat senators who humiliated themselves as well. An update on the tech tyranny going on. And hopefully I'll get to this hydroxychloroquine story, which is devastating. Today's show brought to you by ExpressVPN. Stand up for your digital rights today. Take action. Get a VPN. Go to expressvpn.com/Bongino. Welcome to the Dan Bongino Show. Producer Joe, how are you today?
Oh, my man, I'm doing pretty good. But yeah, just the stuff is wearing on everybody. It's really wearing
on people. It calmed down a little bit last night. A little bit. I'm emphasizing a little. It's still a very dangerous, volatile situation. As I said to Joe before, the rains up in New York kept some people home. You know, the soldiers at Valley Forge fighting for our freedom sat there and nearly froze to death. Many of them did through the winter while eating shoe leather. The rain kept many people away, which is good because, listen, legitimate protesters who believe in something will show up. Criminals and nut jobs who want to break in and loot places generally will stay home in the rain because God forbid they get wet, but that's a good thing. All right, today's show brought to you by our friends at BCM. BCM, Bravo Company Manufacturing, was started in a garage by a Marine veteran more than two decades ago. Bravo Company Manufacturing, known as BCM, builds a professional-grade firearm which is built to combat standards. Ladies and gentlemen, BCM is not a sporting arms company. If you'd like a sporting arm and you are a hunter, that's great. Hunting's terrific, love it, but that is not what BCM builds. BCM builds life-saving equipment meant to save your life. They build the best firearms in the business. I have two of them. They fire accurately every single time on point. I haven't had a single malfunction with mine. When I picked mine up from the federal firearms dealer, he said to me, he knows who he is. He said, Dan, I can't tell you how good these rifles are. These are the best in the business. Why? Because BCM assumes that when a rifle leaves their shop, it'll be used, God forbid, in a life or death situation by a responsible citizen, a law enforcement officer, or a soldier overseas. So quality is all that matters to them. That is it. Every component of a BCM rifle is hand-assembled and tested by Americans in Heartland, Wisconsin to a life-saving standard. That rifle will have to function. They know that when, God forbid, you're not just facing a paper target. That's why BCM is the best in the business. It's who I trust for my home defense. Because of this, BCM knows making this reliable life-saving equipment is only half the story. They have a YouTube channel as well. You can learn more about youtube.com/BravoCompanyUSA. You want to find out more about their products and special offers and some upcoming news? Go to their website too, BravoCompanyMFG.com. That's BravoCompanyMFG.com. Check out their YouTube channel as well, YouTube.com/BravoCompanyUSA. Go today. The best rifles in the business. I'm wearing one of their shirts. They have some cool shirts too. BravoCompanyMFG.com. All right, Joe, let's go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get right into it because I am I'm bothered, deeply troubled by something's going on right now, and just the spread of false narratives used to fuel and fire unrest in our country that's deeply disturbing and doing nothing to solve the problem. What do I mean by that? You're hearing a lot, as I said, over the past few days about the term, I've been talking about this on the show, you know, systemic racism. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's caveat. This is going to be a tough show, but this is a show that has to be done and this has to be said. Racism is a very real thing. I think that's obvious to anyone with a brain listening. Unfortunately, there are people among us, people all around the world, who judge people by all kinds of characteristics entirely unrelated to their character, their soul, the person they are. Why they do that is really evidence of your own shallowness if you happen to be one of those people. Thankfully, I don't have many of them in my audience. It's sad. It's a scourge on our society. I mean, think about it. Approaching someone you've never met in your entire life and already having some kind of a preformed opinion about who they are, and that opinion's a negative one. Obviously, something deeply disturbing. Also, to be said and never dismissed, the country has a troubled history with race. We shouldn't run from that. We should learn from it. Jim Crow was real. Our history with slavery was real. Generations of Americans prior to us, no, I'm not blaming you. Matter of fact, there's going to be a second part of this, but generations prior to us, some Americans back then did some awful things. Some Americans fought against that and died in our Civil War. This is all obvious. Our history is very real. We shouldn't run from it. Yet there are some Americans alive today who still had to suffer through things, indecencies, moral sins upon them that a lot of us haven't. Forced to drink from a water fountain labeled colored, sit in different places in a restaurant. The indignity of that, I can't imagine. Luckily, most of you can't either. I'm not here to run from that. No one else should either. How we treat decent human beings who did nothing wrong because of the melanin component of their skin, and how some have in the past, was a stain on that generation of people who engaged in that behavior. And it should always be taught in history. But ladies and gentlemen, this institutional systemic racism thing, in other words, this system is race. Ladies and gentlemen, a system is very, this is, you understand what they're doing here? They're trying to take away from isolated, thankfully, increasingly more isolated examples of overt racism in our society. And they're trying to impose upon you a permanent sense of guilt, even if people like you, me, Joe, Paula, and others will fight against this racism till the day we die for obvious reasons, moral and ethical. They're trying to impose upon you a permanent sense of guilt as if you're the problem. They're doing this because they want political power, ladies and gentlemen. They are not doing this because they believe every white American out there should be guilty because you have some form of systemic institutional racism you can't get rid of. That's not what they actually believe. Believe me, that's not what they believe. They're doing this to fuel the fires. To fuel the fires, to pit us against each other, to walk in there as politicians and fake political demigods and say, look, I'm going to be the one to save you from those evil people over there. Whatever that group may be, the corporatists, white America, the patriarchs. This is what they do. They leverage this for political power. You have to stop. This has to be cut off now. Why am I bringing this up in relationship to the opening of the show? Because I'm seeing something developing on social media. I really can't believe. I'm not kidding when I tell you I had to look and look twice and check to make sure that this wasn't some kind of a farce. Remember what we're talking about here. We're not talking about individual episodes of legitimate, sad, and candidly, quite grotesque racism that sadly do still happen, but are becoming less and less and less and less common as the country grows and evolves. We're talking about allegations that somehow there should be some imposition again of permanent guilt on people who've done nothing wrong because of the color of your skin. Isn't that the very definition of racism in and of itself? What do I mean by that? What am I talking about? If you go to social media and you're on Parler, or Twitter, or Facebook, or any Snapchat, or any of these other platforms out there, you're going to see a lot of these types of photos. I took this screenshot this morning. This is real. This is from Twitter. This is from a rally for a George Floyd protest, the man killed by the police officer in that incident we all know about now, sadly. This is an actual tweet from an account, BXM. White people praying and kneeling before black people asking for forgiveness for racism. Hashtag George Floyd protest. Are you a racist? If you are, maybe you should ask for forgiveness. Maybe you should ask for forgiveness from the people you've been racist towards and from the Almighty. Not maybe. You should. But a bunch of, by the way, that picture is just one point. That's a video. I took a screenshot. There are probably 50 to 100 people who happen to be white kneeling and genuflecting before a group of black men and women at a protest asking for free. What are you, I don't understand. I mean, what are you asking for? Are you acknowledging you're a racist? If you are, you've got some problems you need to handle. This is not isolated. These videos are all over the internet. Let me be crystal clear. If you are a hardcore racist, you have serious issues you need to handle, as you are the problem. But if you are not, and you are on the right side of this argument, fighting for real, authentic justice, deliberate, process-oriented justice in a constitutional republic, then get the hell off your knee. What the hell are you kneeling for? What are you kneel? Get up off your, what are you kneeling for? I'll kneel. I'll kneel before the Almighty and confess my many sins. I'm a sinner. I try to repent for it every day, and I pray every night, please, Father, make me a better man tomorrow than I was today. I fail a lot. Many of you do too. I'm not kneeling before any man. And you shouldn't either. If you're a racist and you've got issues, you need to get that handled, stat. But if you're on the right side of right and not the wrong side of right, get up off your damn knees. What the hell are you doing? You see how this imposition of imposed, this imposed permanent guilt upon people because of the color of their skin or the lack of melanin in their skin? Do you see how this has no end? This will never lead to any collective good moving forward, ever. You want to fix something? Get up off your damn knees. Go out and talk to people in your community. Meet with the cops. Walk into the precinct and ask if you can meet with the sergeant, the lieutenant, the sheriff, whoever it may be. Bring a group of your neighbors. Ask the sheriff to come by. If you have an HOA, a community, a block full of people, whatever it may be, ask the sheriff to come out. My sheriff down here does it all the time. Ask him to come out and talk about use of force, what policies are, what training happens. Go out and vote. I'm not telling you who to vote for. You don't like who's in charge? You don't like your sheriff? You don't like your councilman? You don't like your president? Vote for change. How about talking to your kids? Something happened in my house a long time ago. Somebody said something I didn't like. It was something I really didn't like. It was in front of my kids. That didn't happen in front of my kids. I'm going to leave the details, but everybody who's involved knows exactly what happened. That didn't happen in front of my kids. My kids weren't going to hear that. Talk to your kids. Talk about our history with race. What happens when people judge people by the melanin component of their skin, where they were born, what religion they practice, and not by what they actually do and the lives they lead. Assemble, protest, peacefully. Petition your government. Run for office. I did. I lost. It hurt. I don't regret one bit of it. But I put my name on a ballot, fought for something I believed in. We almost won. Almost doesn't count. Horseshoes and hand grenades. But it led to this. But get off your damn knees. You don't genuflect before anybody. You'll genuflect before the Almighty when it's your time. But this is not helping. This is one of the most deeply disturbing phenomenons I've ever seen in my lifetime. Human beings asking other human beings to kneel before them for an imposed collective guilt for something you didn't do. There's a powerful piece in the Wall Street Journal today by Dan Henninger. It's worth your time. Unfortunately, it's a subscription-only paper, but this piece is worth your time. If you can go over and look at it, I'd appreciate it. If you can't, I have a couple highlights from it. But it's on this topic of this collective guilt you're supposed to. Again, whether you fought for real justice or not, you're supposed to have this collective guilt and kneel before people. No, not me. I'm not doing that. The piece is titled America's New Nihilism. Systemic racism is a systemic forgetting of 55 years of urban policy failure. Ladies and gentlemen, have you noticed as well that this pressure to kneel and this pressure to acknowledge systemic racism is happening largely in communities run by liberals for the last five decades? Let me go to a piece. This Henninger's piece is powerful, and it's worth your time. How this word, this buzzword amongst the woke crowd for today, systemic racism, how it may be a cover for the failure of liberal policies to erase the stain of racism on this country through slavery and Jim Crow and to fix anything. Liberals have been in charge in some of these largely minority cities for, in some cases, 60 and 70 years. They have not had an elected Republican on the city council in the city of Baltimore, which is largely Black and Hispanic, since I think 1939. Mm-hmm. What have you done to fix the plight of Black Americans? The answer is, the liberals running these cities have done nothing. They've made it worse. From the piece. 55 years, folks. 55 years of liberal failure. Quote, Dan Henninger, it's evident from the coverage that most of the demonstrators were born after 1990. By then, the Lyndon Johnson Great Society programs had been in place for 25 years. Now it's 55 years. Annual budget appropriations totaling multiple trillions of dollars on Medicaid, food stamps, welfare, public housing, rent subsidies, and federal aid to public schools have produced what? You want the answer? They have produced generational poverty, ladies and gentlemen. Generational poverty. Generations of fatherless at-home children growing up without a positive male influence in their lives. When are we going to have this conversation? My wife and I both grew up in a divorced home. It's tough. It's not the easy fairy tale liberals wanted you to believe. Oh, you know, a good divorce is better than a bad marriage. No, I don't think it is in many cases, outside of certain obvious circumstances, emergencies. You need your dad. We all do. When are we going to talk about that? Or are we going to continue to blame the failures of Baltimore to rescue anyone? I mean, generations of people just subjected to a different America than you and I. Pockets of poverty in East New York, Brooklyn, Washington Heights and Manhattan and other areas. Pockets of poverty that have been generational. People living in housing projects and substandard housing, grandmother, mother, child. When are we going to talk about that? You're going to just blame it on systemic? What's systemically racist about it? I'm not sure. I don't understand that. Are we just going to forget about those problems and forget about those people and use buzz terms to, again, impose collective guilt on people without actually attempting to find out what the root cause of generational poverty is? Folks, listen. When you're a police officer in the streets of New York like I was, you wake up real fast. And you find out that quickly, there's nothing different about anybody. The gene code is the same amongst all of us. Yeah, we have our variants, obviously. But there's no X-Men out there. There's no mutants out there. It's just us. There's nothing predisposed genetically about anyone to be some substandard intellect or anything like that. If you believe that, you've got issues. Something is broken that is causing the fall of the Black family and the Black community and people in minority communities that is not related to anything in the gene code. And the fact that we're not willing to look at it and say what policies have caused this generational harm on our Black families, the fact that we're avoiding it and sidelining it because it's uncomfortable is not going to happen on this show. I ran in Maryland. We almost won a seat over there. It's a large, very large. And in some portions of the state, Prince George's County, some of the wealthiest upper middle class and upper class Black families in the country. It's not what they're doing. It's something being done to them. And if you're going to use the term systemic racism, then the system you should look at is the system they've been subjected to. This is the coup de grace. This. And what system is that? Liberalism. Everywhere you find pockets of largely minority poverty, broken homes, criminality, you find a city run by liberals. And ironically, in a piece I spoke about with Joe, actually, in my basement 6 years ago, we were doing this show for only 100 people rather than millions like we do now. It was an article Bill McGurn wrote in the Wall Street Journal a long time ago, comparing a largely white area of the Appalachian region with a largely Black community. And they both had the same problems, criminality, drug use, broken homes. You know what they both had in common? Big government, liberal type failures. It's not the people. If you're going to quote systemic racism, then you damn well better talk about what that system is. And that system is liberalism and big government that has broken generations of these families. 55 years, ladies and gentlemen, trillions of dollars spent, housing, food assistance, welfare, SNAP, Medicaid, you name it. And what have we gotten? Nothing. Generational poverty, broken families, and young Black kids and Hispanic kids with absolutely no chance at a future. Let's go to the second part of Henninger's piece. He says, quote, since the 60s, essentially little has changed in the neighborhoods at the center of the long ago urban riots. By current telling, they're about as poor, as crime-ridden and undereducated and in poor health as they were when Johnson said he would change them. That means 5 decades of stasis and stagnation in America's most marginalized places, virtually all of it under Democratic, now, quote, progressive political control. The failure of the liberal model is by now, listen to this, listen to this. The failure of the liberal model is by now so embarrassing that the current owners of that model have created an alternative universe of explanations, such as blaming it on American settlers in the early 17th century or the non-existence of, quote, justice. Something's got to give, folks. Something's got to give. If you are going to cite systemic racism and impose upon people with a different color skin than you the requirement to bow and genuflect before you and atone for sins you didn't make, while you avoid discussing the system imposing upon your communities the poverty, the lack of education, the poor medical facilities you're subjected to, then you are the problem. You are not part of the solution. And I'm deeply sorry to have to break that news to you. And however uncomfortable this conversation is, oh, I'm sure we'll get a massive liberal protest off this show. Why? Because they're afraid. Because they know what I'm saying is true. And they don't want you to hear the truth. There's no Black America. There's no white America. There's an America. And when something happens to Black Americans or Hispanic Americans, like what happened to Mr. Floyd, you had a moment of solid, strong, collective outrage. Everybody who watched that knows something was wrong with that. Everybody. You can't hide that. But that's all been lost now. As people who, and politicians and bureaucrats and fake community leaders come out and leverage this for their own power. Damn shame. Get off your knees. You don't kneel before any other man. Kneel before God and ask God for forgiveness. All right. I got a lot more to talk about today, folks. This is going to be a very serious show. I've got a lot going on. Jim Mattis yesterday, our former defense secretary, just, I don't know what he's doing right now. I want to get to that. And I want to get to, importantly, the Rosenstein hearing. And regarding Mattis, a very serious situation I'm getting from friends of mine and sources developing in D.C. right now with President Trump with regards to the military. This is not weird. This is the real deal. All right, let's get to our second sponsor. Today's show brought to you by our friends at We the People. I really appreciate you supporting We the People holsters. They've been flooded with orders because of record numbers of people buying firearms and ammunition for the first time. If you're going to buy a firearm, ladies and gentlemen, get a new handgun, you need a quality holster. Candidly, carrying your new firearm, your old firearm, whatever firearm you have now, in a substandard holster where it's going to fall out is a disaster. It's unsafe. It's not right. Go pick up for yourself a high-quality holster which will retain your firearm even in, God forbid, a stressful situation. Here's one right here. This is one of mine. See it? These are precision molded to the firearm you have now. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Those one-size-fits-all holsters fit none. I've had them. They're awful. They're uncomfortable. They don't work. They won't retain your firearm. Starting at just $39, We the People holsters are custom designed right here in the USA. They fit your firearm perfectly. They have thousands of options. Their proprietary clip design on the back allows you to easily adjust the cant and the ride for comfort and safety. Now's the time to support American companies. Go to wethepeopleholsters.com/Dan to get yours. Every holster ships free, comes with a lifetime guarantee. You're not going to get a better deal or better holster anywhere for the price. Get an additional $10 off with the offer code DAN. If satisfaction guaranteed, if it's not a perfect fit, send it back for a total refund. Go to wethepeopleholsters.com/Dan. Wethepeopleholsters.com/Dan. Again, this is mine. Use offer code DAN. Get some terrific rebates, terrific holster. Safety. Got to keep that firearm in there. This is the way to go. Wethepeopleholsters.com/Dan. Go check them out. Okay, folks, I've been communicating constantly with multiple sources of mine, and one of them yesterday relayed to me something really disturbing, folks. Let me give you some background first. Obviously, we have a lot of civil disturbance going on. We've had riots. We've had unrest. We've mixed in with legitimate protests here and there. The riots, the disturbance, the actual almost surrendering of New York City over the last week was so deeply disturbing. I had friends calling me from New York wondering if the city was ever going to be the same or if we were going to have a generation now like they had in the 70s, a generation in New York where just the city was surrendered to criminals. President Trump, in response to the civil unrest and the outright criminality, and in some case, I believe terrorism from Antifa, responded by giving a speech in the Rose Garden the other day and saying that if he needed to, he didn't invoke it, but if he needed to, in response to the continued rioting and unrest, he would invoke the Insurrection Act and use the United States military. The Insurrection Act from the early 1800s is a constitutional law which would allow the President of the United States on U.S. soil to use the United States military to do things like suppress a rebellion or respond to a total breakdown of civil order. There's very little question it's constitutional. It's been used before, the contours of it and the margins of it. Yes, there's some legal debate over the fact that the law exists and enables the president to use the U.S. military is not in question. Again, the contours of it, to give you both sides, and the limits of it and under what circumstances are certainly open for debate in a civil society. That the Insurrection Act exists and that the president can use the U.S. military here in emergency situations is not in question. Now, I've made my position clear. I think the use of the U.S. military on U.S. soil would be, at this point, an extremely bad idea. I've tweeted it. I've said it multiple times. Let me be crystal clear. My opinion has not changed one bit. I think it's a setup. I think people in the media trying to leverage this situation for clickbait. I think politicians trying to leverage this situation for division and more votes in the next election would like nothing more than to see the member of a U.S. military ordered by President Trump in one of their cities get in a skirmish with a protester. President Trump thankfully cleared out the front of the White House the other day. Look at what's happened from that. That was a sign of strength. It was necessary. That White House had become the source of multiple attacks by organized groups and criminals mixed in with people there to legitimately protest. If those were Tea Partiers in front of the White House that had set fire to the church, they'd be calling for them to be taken out of there in handcuffs, put in a daisy chain, and all put in prison for the rest of their lives. But the media is not on the side of America on this one, or liberty or freedom or anything else. I'm bringing that up because can you imagine, God forbid, a skirmish between the United States military in a major American city and a crowd of protesters? That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, it would be a disaster on an epic scale. That's why I've stated, and I'll state one last time, this is not the time for that now. Having said that, I don't disagree with President Trump bringing it up as an option in the Rose Garden, letting people know, the terrorists and the rioters, that the continued destruction of America's major cities and the potential of a major American city actually falling, the fall of an American city happening, will not be tolerated. And this is in my toolbox. I don't disagree with him one bit for saying this is out there and it could happen. That threat has to be real. How does this tie into what my sources are telling me? Folks, the president's getting bad advice from a lot of people. I'm very sorry to inform you. They want him to be soft. Ladies and gentlemen, on legitimate protests, we should always be soft. As I've said to you before, keep law, keep order, but people have the right to protest. Whether you agree with them or not is entirely irrelevant. They have a big R God-given right to assemble and petition their government, just like you do. You have absolutely no right to engage in criminality, burn someone's property, hurt them, attack them, wound a police officer, or God forbid, murder someone like police officers around the country now are being murdered. The president had every right to talk about the Insurrection Act in the U.S. military. What I'm hearing from people is that there are some military brass. This is uncomfortable for me to talk about, but you need to hear it because you need to be warned. And some civilian representatives of the military, undersecretary types and others, who are organizing together and talking about how they're going to either talk the president out of or just simply not obey his orders if the president, God forbid, and again, as I said, it would be a very bad idea now, but if we were to lose an American city using the U.S. military, think about what I just told you. Folks, I've been doing this now. This is episode 1266. Joe's been there with me from episode one. My wife's been married to me from episode one. I don't think I've ever told you something as serious as what I just told you. These are not second-rate garbage sources. These are legitimate, real people who are genuinely concerned that some upper-level people in our military are openly talking about defying the President of the United States. That's got a name. It's called a mutiny. What is this, Venezuela? You don't like the president's decisions about his constitutional authority to use our military to suppress an emergency situation? Then there's a solution for that. It's called an election. It'll be here in November. Not here to tell you who to vote for. You know who I'm voting for. I've been a supporter of the president, and I'll continue to. My vote's not a secret. I'm not telling you who to vote for. But the mere suggestion that the president of the United States is no longer the commander-in-chief, and some band of military insiders is somehow going to band together and collectively ignore the president of the United States? Again, I have not relayed or passed on to you a more serious, dreadful piece of information than that. It's not a joke. You don't like the president's judgment? That's fine. You vote him out of office. If the president is no longer the de jure and becomes just the de facto commander-in-chief, you're going to have a country ruled by upper-level people in the military who just decide what they want when they want. That's not a constitutional republic. Now, folks, they're being egged on. Oh, there's part two to this. What I told you is not a fairy tale. This is real. And again, it's a limited group of people, but people with enough power that this is very dangerous. The second part of this is they're being egged on by the fake conservative class. You know, the phony conservatives out there. The Bushies and all those people who are probably going to come out and endorse Biden, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They're also being egged on by former military officials who have since left their military careers, some decorated military careers, and are now deciding to act like politicians. One of them is James Mattis. He gave an interview with The Atlantic that is so deeply disturbing, it's hard to believe that a former defense secretary for President Trump would actually say this on the record. Now, if Jim Mattis, President Trump's former defense secretary, wants to attack the president and become a politician, he's a citizen of the United States with every big R God-given right I had. I objected to the president of the United States, too, when I worked for Barack Obama. I left. I put my name on a ballot. It's tough. You get beat up. You got to go knock on doors. You got to go shake hands and talk to people. And you got to try to win people's hearts and minds. We almost did, but almost doesn't count. But I did it. I had the guts to do it. Oh, you can't talk about Jim Mattis that way. I can talk about Jim Mattis however I want. God bless the man's decorated military career. He's a hero to many. But just like I spoke about Bob Mueller and his military career as well, your past actions and heroism do not absolve you of every mistake you make in the future. I don't get that pass. I'm not claiming I'm a hero, folks. Please don't mistake what I'm saying. I was a Secret Service agent. I spent a lot of time in the world's hot zones defending Barack Obama and everybody else in very dangerous places my family and I suffered a lot for. I'm not asking anybody for any pat on the back. I got paid well for it. It's a job I chose to do. But liberals never say, oh, don't attack Dan Bongino because what he said on his show, you know, he was a Secret Service agent. Never. I've never heard that with Joe. Have you heard that? Have we got that card? No. Has that card been played on us? No, Joe has. Matter of fact, Joe gets it. Joe doesn't even say half the stuff, and he gets attacked for what I say.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
We've been doxxed repeatedly.
Oh.
Not only they not help, they come after us. We don't get that pass. So forgive me, but again, with all due respect to the man's service and heroism in the past, that doesn't absolve you of making catastrophic mistakes in the future. And this interview Jim Mattis gave at The Atlantic is a disgrace. I will not be kneeling before Jim Mattis or anyone else. Here it is. Let me tell you what about it specifically is so deeply troubling. Jim Mattis wants to run for office. Jim, go right ahead. The Atlantic, Jeffrey Goldberg, quote, James Mattis denounces President Trump, describes him as a threat to the Constitution. This is unbelievable. You doubt what I'm telling you about this small group of military people still working? Who are sitting there posturing on how to defy the president? They're being egged on by the Bushies and former Defense Department people and military folks on the outside who can't stand President Trump because he's a threat to every single thing the swamp represents. Let's go to Mattis. This is Mattis from The Atlantic. This is unreal. Quote from Jim Mattis. I've watched the week's unfolding events, angry and appalled, Mattis writes. The words equal justice under Laura Carve are carved in the pediment of the U.S. Supreme Court. This is precisely what protesters are rightly demanding. It is a wholesome and unifying demand, one that all of us should be able to get behind. We must not be distracted by a small number of lawbreakers. Jim, what planet did you write this from? A small number of lawbreakers? And by the way, Jim, nobody's distracted. This show hasn't been distracted. This show has been focusing on and triaging the emergency issue of the day. We were all focused, by the way, on what happened to Mr. Floyd on this show. It's recorded, Jim. You can watch it on Fox and just about every other conservative channel so disturbed by that video until not a small number of rioters or terrorists from Antifa, but a rather large number of Antifa terrorists and rioters decided to try to attack and take down American cities while murdering police officers, burning cities down, attacking innocents, and stealing millions of dollars worth of things that don't belong to them. I'm sorry, Jim, did you miss all that? President Trump's the problem here? He's a threat to the Constitution? How is that exactly? By giving a speech telling the governors to control their states before they lose them? What exactly is tyrannical about that? Mattis, the scion of... No. He may have been a battlefield scion. I didn't work for Jim Mattis. I don't know him personally. Since he's left office, this is disgraceful conduct. A small number of looters. What planet is this guy living on? This is the talk of a politician. Not a decorated Marine. Are you kidding me? You even turned on the television? You understand what's going on? All that tough guy talk. What did I tell you? Biggest tough guy. All biggest tough guys I know are the quiet ones. All that tough guy talk. Now with by a small number of looters. Don't get distracted by looters. As if it's our fault that we're focusing on, gosh, my house and business may burn down. You expect people to think about George Floyd as their pharmacies in Midtown Manhattan are burning to the ground and people steal their OxyContin? Oh, I got distracted for a minute. They burned down my store. Let me get back to George Floyd. This is the left's new, you know, scion of goodwill. Let's go to number two from this disgraceful Mattis piece. An embarrassment that deserves to be called out. Mattis, quote, Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime who does not try to unite the American people and doesn't even pretend to try. Instead, he tries to divide us. There has never been a Republican president, whether you like it or not, who has done more to deliberately make an outreach effort to communities that traditionally don't vote for the GOP. The Black community, the Hispanic community, the gay community, the LGBT community. Whether you agree with any of that or not, and you think the president should treat all people equal and forget putting people into pockets the left has created, whether you agree with that approach or not, Jim Mattis's suggestion that this president has attempted to divide us is so patently absurd, he should be embarrassed and resign from public life tomorrow. The president has done more events at the White House for the black community. He has given more speeches about historically low black unemployment rates before the Wuhan virus was unleashed upon us. He has done more. I don't even agree with criminal justice reform. I think it's a terrible idea. President Trump did that because people in the black community felt strongly about it. What the hell is Jim Mattis talking about? What planet is he living on right now? There has never been a Republican president who's done more. Ever. This is a disgrace, this op-ed, from a man the president trusted. Folks, I heard something about President Trump this morning, and I want to pass it on because it was right. I'm not a huge fan of Lindsey Graham, by the way, obviously. I think they did a semi-decent job yesterday until he screwed it up. But having said that, you know, he said this morning, and it's a good description of President Trump. He's a handful. There's no question about it. His style is totally different. Sometimes a little bit more abrasive. I've told you that. I come from Queens where he comes from. I get it. I know why he's like that, because I'm like that. And a lot of other people are too from Queens. You know why people from Queens, New York are like that? A lot of them, not all of them. Because when you grow up in the five boroughs of New York City, Queens is like the middle of a sandwich. It's a middle-class community. So you're never treated as tough as the kids who grew up rough in Brooklyn. You come from Brooklyn, you're an automatic, you know, considered a roughneck, tough guy. Mm. Bronx too. He's from the Bronx or Brooklyn. I'm telling you, if you grew up in New York in the 70s or 80s, you know exactly, Paula used to joke about it all the time. Kids used to get on her bus when she was in the Bronx and be like, I'm from the Bronx. And when Paula moved to Queens from the Bronx, Paula's never fought anyone a day in her life. She'll acknowledge that. When she told people she was from the Bronx, they got away. They thought Paula was like Ronda Rousey. She'll tell you the story if you ever meet her at CPAC or whatever. You don't get that when you're from Queens. When you're from Queens, you're considered kind of a softie. Because you grew up middle class. You're not tough. You don't get a lot of fights. But that's not only why Trump is the way he is. I'm from Queens, too. You're middle class, so you don't have the money of the rich Manhattan kids who have their own prestige from wealth and being elites. They have last names that are important. They have endowments. Their fathers are politicians and CEOs. So they look down on the Queens kids as kind of the great unwashed. So you always have to fight because you want to be as tough as the Brooklyn kids. Literally fight. And you always have to engage in some kind of hyperbole and puffery because you want to feel as important as the Manhattan kids. Everyone from Queens is like that. President Trump's like that. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy. It means he has a different style. You can criticize it. You don't have to like it. You may think he's a bad guy. Historically, a low black unemployment, historically low Hispanic unemployment, tax cuts, a growing economy before this plague, conservative judges on the federal court, the removal of massive amounts of red tape, a push for school choice reform, an anti-abortion saving lives agenda. Do you even care about Trump's results, or are you just so caught up in the Twitter stuff? That's what Jim Mattis is caught up in. I sincerely thought Jim Mattis had better judgment than that. And again, with all due respect to a decorated career, that doesn't absolve you of the grotesque stain on this country you just put on it by writing that disgusting, grotesque, divisive op-ed. It's a lie, and you know it's a lie. Haven't even touched Rosenstein yet. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I got my last sponsor today, and we got to get to some of this Rosenstein stuff because he just humiliated himself up on Capitol Hill yesterday. Our final sponsor of the day. Now's the time, unfortunately, to be talking about this. Not because they're one of my sponsors, but because it's necessary. Ladies and gentlemen, you insure everything in your lives that matter, do you not? Your health. People have dental insurance for their teeth. Health insurance, life insurance, home insurance, car insurance. Think about it. How do you not have insurance for your food supply? That's insane. We're witnessing coronavirus driving markets down. You have the demand for basic necessities through the roof. We've seen food supply strain. Folks, I worry for other people with their food supply when it's strained. I worry about empty shelves. I don't worry here because I have Patriot Supply, tons of it. I buy it myself. I have the receipts. Even though they send me stuff, I buy it. Because I just prefer to never have to look my kids in the face, if God forbid, the food supply strain, and saying, you know, Dad doesn't have any food for today. I'm not doing that. I'm sorry. A lot of people are under self-quarantine. They don't want to face the mob for a loaf of bread. Go to preparewithdan.com and reserve your emergency supply of food today. You can get a 2-week or a 4-week emergency food kit. I recommend the 4-week for everyone in your household. These meals include breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They last up to 25 years, ladies and gentlemen. That's a lot of mental peace you can put yourself in. My Patriot Supply has been a trusted partner in my show for years. They've been working around the clock to keep up with your orders. They've been a little bit overwhelmed, ladies and gentlemen. The current wait is 8 to 12 weeks because demand has been 80 times normal. It's been through the roof as people prepare and ensure their food supply. Do it now. They have no idea how long this crisis is going to last, so it's important to be self-reliant. It's not too late. Go to preparewithdan.com today and ensure your food supply. Pick up a 4-week kit for everyone in your household. Preparewithdan.com. That's preparewithdan.com. Okay? Hey, folks, before I get to Rosenstein, one more quick note on this. Defense Secretary Mark Esper should resign immediately. I should have included that in the last block. The defense secretary wants to give press conferences and publicly disagree with the president. That's fine. He can do that as a politician. Esper has been a disaster in this. Esper should resign or publicly come out tomorrow and say the president of the United States is the commander in chief. Any lawful order, we will acknowledge. If you're not willing to do that, please step aside. You embarrassed yourself yesterday and the country. Moving on. Told you today was going to be a lot. Disastrous former acting attorney general Rod Rosenstein testified on Capitol Hill yesterday in front of a Senate committee, humiliated himself and the entire country. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, the president was spied on using a FISA warrant from a foreign intelligence surveillance court based on a fake dossier of false information paid for by Hillary Clinton. Rod Rosenstein, in fact, signed off on one of those warrants to spy on the president. So Rod Rosenstein was put under oath on the Hill yesterday and was absolutely grilled by Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Mike Lee, and others. Here is an exchange with Josh Hawley, a senator from Missouri, who is asking Rod Rosenstein, well, if you signed off on a warrant to spy on President Trump's presidential campaign, and basically President Trump as well afterwards, then who's accountable for the fact that the information in the warrant, in other words, we're spying on President Trump because of this, this, and this in the dossier, that turned out to be categorically false information. You all swore it was true. If you signed your John Hancock, Rod Rosenstein, to that document, then who's responsible? Watch this slithering snake try to bail his way out of this. Well, I don't know. You don't really know how the process went. Check this out.
I approved the submission of it, and four federal judges signed off on it too, Senator, because, like me, they believed that the information had been verified and was accurate.
Did they have a duty to verify the information?
No, the agents had a duty to verify.
Oh, so you did not have a duty to verify the information?
I had a duty.
Your name on the application.
Well, I had a duty to make sure it had been verified.
Did you rubber stamp it?
Senator, the Deputy Attorney General or the Attorney General.
Just answer my question. Did you rubber stamp? You said a second ago to Senator Cruz, said I didn't rubber stamp it.
If you'd like me to explain, I will. But I certainly.
But you also testified today that you didn't read it. So I'm curious.
No, I didn't say.
How is it? Would you like us to have your testimony read back to you? You said I can't say that I read it. I don't think I read every page. I mean.
Yes, I did say that. Yes.
But okay, so you didn't rubber stamp it, but you didn't read it.
You know, Senator, I have to explain the process.
I think we're familiar with the process. No, the OIG gave us the process. By the time it got to you, you had 17 critical errors, falsehoods, omissions, leading a federal court to say they have never seen anything like this and they can't trust anything else the FBI says, and you signed off on it. Let me ask you this. Who are we to hold responsible? Yes. You're saying it's not you.
No, I'm saying, Senator, that I am accountable for it. But the question is, why did it happen? Now, I'm no longer in the department, but there are people who are there who I expect will figure out why it happened and will fix the problem. So I'm not trying to deny.
Do you have any theories about what the problem might be?
I only know what the Inspector General's report reflects, Senator.
You should really try to get your arms, as an old friend of mine, the Secret Service, you say, Dan, wrap your arms around this. What this epic level snake just said. He was the acting attorney general of the United States. The FBI works for him under the Department of Justice. they were legally obligated to verify the information they presented in a document, a warrant they presented for him to sign to authorize them to spy on a presidential campaign. And this slithering snake admits he didn't read it, but then says he didn't rubber stamp it. For the liberals listening, you know what rubber stamp means. You know, when you take the rubber stamp, you don't read anything. It's your signature. You're the CEO. Meanwhile, you sign something. It's like a death warrant for yourself. Knock off the CEO. Rubber stamp. That's what rubber stamping means for the liberals listening. It means there's no real process here. It's all a fake faux de facto process, not an actual de jure legal process where you have someone... Now, Joe, again, call me crazy, but the whole idea of having the acting attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, sign off on a warrant to spy on a campaign, in other words, putting a personal identifier, his signature, on a document, is not because they love his penmanship. It's because they're suggesting that he should use his authority to at least read the document and make sure it's real. I mean, Joe, is there anything I'm suggesting there that sounds remotely out of line?
No, you got the right idea. I mean, you're on the right track
now,
there.
Now, Joe.
Yeah.
Joe has his own thing, but Joe works with us. When we sign or authorize a payment to Joe, we sign it because we authorize the funds to be transferred to Joe for his work here.
That's correct.
And that signature is meant to be a unique identifier, like a fingerprint, a retinal scan, or something else.
Mm-hmm.
So Rod Rosenstein suggesting he signed off on a warrant to spy on a presidential campaign in the most consequential counterintelligence investigation in modern U.S. history. And he didn't read the document, his own testimony. But then again, he says, but I didn't rubber stamp it either. And we're supposed to take this buffoon seriously?
Ooh.
Zero accountability here. And good question by Josh Hawley. Well, who do we hold responsible? Rosenstein. Well, I may not be responsible, but I'm accountable. What? This gets better. Here's part two of this. Keep in mind on part two of this, another minute of this. He is authorized as the acting attorney general, not only the deputy attorney general under Sessions, the appointment of Bob Mueller for the witch hunt for a fake collusion charge they already knew didn't exist. He's already signed off on the spying warrants to spy on the Trump campaign. He's avoiding any personal responsibility here whatsoever. Keep in mind the whole time he's investigating a United States major party presidential candidate, Donald J. Trump. And this guy did not even bother to read the warrant. Listen to part two of this where he totally evades responsibility. Again, this is grotesque. Check this out.
I only know what the Inspector General's report reflects, Senator. And again, I've been gone for 13 months, so I have no insight.
Wouldn't you agree with me that a process that is so corrupted that it resulted in the abuse of a federal court in an ex parte proceeding during a presidential campaign is a threat to American democracy? Is a threat to the integrity of our elections? Would you agree with that?
It's certainly a threat to the integrity of the judicial system and the FISA process. But I need to explain to you, Senator, that when you're running an organization with 115,000 people, you're not going to be able to personally verify the information.
No, I know. So, and that's why you can't be held responsible.
No, I am
the FBI
responsible.
Says they can't be held responsible. And so at the end of the day, it's nobody's fault.
No,
the FISA court has been misled. The FISA court is saying we can't trust anything the FBI says, but nobody's to blame for it.
I can't. I just can't believe it. He's not personally responsible? Does he understand how the chain of command works and why there is a chain of command and a signature procedure? This is not a stupid man, Rod Rosenstein. Of course he understands it. He's just a snake. When you're a federal agent and you're the line investigator conducting the investigation, and you're verifying that you think Armacost robbed the bank, Joe robbed the bank, you're going and you're shaking that information out of the trees yourself and you're making sure it's real.
Mm-hmm.
Your GS-14 then says to you, hey, I saw this in the report. You're making an allegation Joe robbed the bank. What are you basing it on? I'm basing it on this source who said this and a videotape of the bank. That GS-14 then passes it up to the special agent in charge of the office who then starts asking when it works right.
Right.
Not suggesting the Secret Service doesn't have its mistakes too, but the special agent in charge then goes to the 14. How does your agent know Joe robbed the bank? He's got video. He's got an on-the-ground source. Okay, they send it to headquarters. Headquarters then asked the special agent in charge, how do you know this guy robbed a bank? I got it from the 14 who got it from the agent who's got a source and video. I assure you, if Armacost was running for president, was a Republican nominee, the DOJ would get involved in that bank robbery case too, which would be investigated by the FBI, not the Secret Service. But we'll leave those nuances out of it. If you were a real deputy attorney general or acting attorney general, you would ask the director of the Secret Service, who would ask the SAC, who would ask the 14, who would then ask the line agent who got the information, hey, is any of this real? But none of that happened because Rod Rosenstein's a snake. I run a business here. That's how we do things. We make a business decision, I make it. And when there's a problem with Bongino Report or Bongino.com or our show or anything else, ultimately it's my problem, even if I didn't do it. I read a headline on my own website I didn't like the other day. I didn't write it. It doesn't matter. It's my name. I called and said, hey, guys, it was a minor mistake. I said, please change this. Because it's my name on it. And I'm personally responsible, even though I personally didn't do it. I was personally responsible for my comments on Hannity, which I opened up my show yesterday and I spoke about openly. Because that's what you do. No apologies from Rosenstein. All pathetic, lame, snake-like excuses. It was disgusting. Here's my final video. This one's a little longer, but it's worth your time. It's about 2 minutes. This is the dreadful hack politician, Mazie Hirono, the senator. Remember the senator about in the Brett Kavanaugh thing? Stand up, man.
Yeah.
Stand up. Remember her? She doesn't stand with Joe Biden accused of a sexual assault. She doesn't want men to stand up there. Just want against Kavanaugh. Fake charges. This is Mazie Hirono, liberal hack senator, Democrat, of course, on that side. We have bad Republicans, too, but this one is just Mazie Hirono is absolutely awful. So here's Mazie Hirono, who is just this great at epic face plants. She barely knows the case herself. She's trying to get Rosenstein to admit, so you have a little background on this, because this face plant is so spectacular. This is the one moment Rosenstein actually saves a scintilla of his credibility. And I want to give you both sides. Mazie Hirono tries to get Rosenstein to admit that, hey, these thousands of federal prosecutors who signed the letter in opposition of Bill Barr have said that there's evidence President Trump obstructed justice, despite the fact that the Mueller report itself did not charge the president with obstruction of justice, and Mueller acknowledged to Bill Barr that they had no case for obstruction of justice. So we tracking? Hirono knows there's this letter out there from Obama era and other, you know, Bushy type DOJ people who wrote this letter saying we should have charged the president with obstruction of justice, even though Mueller didn't. You tracking? Mm-hmm. So she brings this up to Rosenstein, thinking Rosenstein's just going to say, yeah, well, there was a lot of evidence of obstruction because she wants a talking point. It backfires in such spectacular fashion that Hirono has to cut him off and try to restate the question. This is epic. Watch this. Check this out.
More than 1,000 former federal prosecutors who served under both Republican and Democratic administrations disagreed with you regarding the obstruction of justice issue. And they wrote that they believe President Trump's conduct described in Special Counsel Mueller's report would, quote, result in multiple felony charges for obstruction of justice, end quote. They emphasize that these are not matters of professional judgment. They further noted that to look at these facts and say that a prosecutor could not probably sustain a conviction for obstruction of justice runs counter to logic and experience. So can you explain why you are right and more than 1,000 former DOJ prosecutors are wrong on the issue of obstruction of justice by this president?
Well, Senator, we have a lot more than 1,000 former DOJ prosecutors, and I don't know whether all those people read the entire report or were familiar with all the evidence, but I was. And I believe Attorney General Barr has already explained his conclusion. And, Senator, I think it's very important when we complete investigations, we reach conclusions. And the department either determines a case merits prosecution or it does not. And we determine that that case does not merit prosecution. Now, people are free to express contrary opinions. And because
I think I have to repeat myself again, I've read the Mueller report. They did not say that there was not enough evidence with regard to obstruction of justice. They noted, and I disagree with Mueller. I don't know why he didn't come to the conclusion that there was actually enough evidence on the obstruction of justice issue, but that they could not, indict the president. That part is really clear.
Thank you, Senator.
That's good.
That's unfair, Senator, because the investigation was concluded. It was appropriately reviewed. No one recommended in favor of prosecution. The Attorney General and I determined the prosecution was not warranted. And that
That question has been asked and answered.
Of course, Lindsey Graham has to rescue Mazie Hirono there. I can't figure out why he did that, as Rosenstein's about to just humiliate her again. Even the broken snake, Rod Rosenstein, who, believe me, gets no pass from me, is acknowledging that Mazie Hirono's just making that up. There was no case for obstruction laid out in the Mueller report at all. None. Mueller told Bill Barr there was no case for obstruction. Mazie's just making that up. If there was evidence for obstruction, believe me, Mueller and his witch hunters would have charged him. There was none. All right, I had a lot more, folks, but I'm going to have to get to some of it tomorrow. I'm kind of loaded up. I just have a brief announcement. We have another product service out there for you. If you're interested, Joe and I and Paula and Drew have been working really hard on it. It's now available. We have an Amazon flash briefing. Some of you know what that is. Some of you don't. It's called the Bongino Brief. It's going to be portions of the show. We'd really appreciate it if you would download it. Here's how it works. So it's called the Bongino Brief. It's a portion of our show every day. Open the Alexa app on your smartphone or tablet. You just go to settings, select flash briefings on that Alexa app, and then search for Bongino Brief and select it. It's really cool. We're putting a lot of hard work into it. We appreciate it. Again, just your Alexa app, go to settings, select flash briefings, and then search for Bongino Brief and select it. We'd really appreciate that. We've been working hard on a lot of stuff out there trying to get the message out. Thanks a lot, folks. We appreciate it. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Bongino, for the video of the show. We put a lot of work into that too. So thanks so much. I'll see you all tomorrow.
You just heard the Dan Bongino Show. Follow Dan on Twitter 24/7 at DBongino.